Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming Outlander series or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 40, 40 Summer, I can't believe it, of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are still in love with all things Outlander. So, announcements this week. We got a couple of shots from the Outlander Instagram account. The first was a shot in the woods with some costumed characters. It looks like Ronnie Goodwin, I believe his name is, and a girl I've never seen before, fully covered in a tartan. In the woods, it looks very cold, and they... It
looks authentically cold, someone said.
No, for sure. And it says, perhaps they heard the sound of a wild boar in the distance. So this is the Tinchel, perhaps?
I believe so.
We also got a shot of, it looks like, three gentlemen in very long kilts. One of them looks like they're holding a shinty stick. I think it's called, like, a common... I don't know. C-A-M-A-N. I'm sure somebody out there knows how to pronounce that better than me. Very long kilts. I don't think I've ever seen men wearing kilts this long. Is that something they would do in the cold, perhaps?
Well, the great, from what I read around, I read around a little bit, and basically, if the great kilt was not pulled up over their shoulder, it's this long. If you remember the shot of Jaime in the hay with the pitchfork, or leaning on the pitchfork, it was longer in the back.
Yeah.
So,
this... I mean, they just look like they even have bustles. Like,
I know, a little bit.
I think somebody online was like, are these ladies? Are we sure these are men? No, these are definitely gentlemen. Yeah, shinty stick. Maybe there's a game of shinty going on. We also got a new newsletter this week. This one is very Claire-centric. I believe it was kind of highlighted, not highlighted, like entitled, like Finding Our Claire or something along those lines. Also, it mentions the premiere date again. It also discusses the casting and the search and everything and how all of the minutiae of Claire, the little things, didn't matter anymore once they met Katrina, because they were like, I know somebody was like, who cares if she's too tall? I think Diana said, what were they going to do? They found the perfect actress. They're not going to cut her feet off.
Yeah. So it talks a little bit about the audition, that once they saw her, that they knew it was her. And she admits it was pretty terrifying or daunting to prepare for such a role with such a short period of time and as much as she had to do.
She only had like 2 weeks,
weeks. I don't even know.
For prep, most, like Jaime had months and she had weeks.
And she had tons of reading, tons of research, and she was training. And luckily, she does not need the training in the Gaelic. That is one thing, a blessing for her character. But she did have training in by an herbalist. Katrina mentions, which I think is very interesting and true. And I think, oh, she's only in the 40s for who knows how many, how many scenes, right?
Right, but
the whole thing is that's her entire character.
Yeah, yeah.
Forever. So her immersing herself in everything from the 40s was very interesting. It's not something I would have thought about.
Absolutely.
But it's very important.
But ladies, get excited. Gentlemen, you can be excited too. Next issue will be about Jaime Fraser. So get excited. We also got a new posting. This was actually something that was shared with us from, was Anna Halligan?
Mm-hmm. She's the Outlander Writers Production Assistant. She was so kind as to share some photos with us that we went ahead and put on our blog and shared via Facebook and Twitter. And it was, she had actually gone outside at the Sony lot and taken a picture of this huge poster. More than life-size poster.
Oh my gosh.
On the side of the building. And it's just, it's beyond. It's
so
gorgeous.
Exciting.
Like, Thank you so much, Anna.
I got excited to see it on my phone when it came through, like, an email and I saw it on websites. But to see it that big on the side of a building in Los Angeles.
It is a lot.
It's happening, people. It's totally happening.
Well, if you don't think it's happening by now, I know I still have a pinch me moment, but do not pinch me.
Gosh.
It's pretty, it's pretty amazing.
Poisoned Pen Bookstore posted
which is a local bookstore in
Arizona,
in Phoenix, I believe.
Posted some pictures, boxes and boxes and boxes of books. Apparently there are 3,000 copies of Moby, and Diana has started signing them. So it looks like she's going to be at the Arizona Biltmore on the 10th of June. So get excited, Arizona. She's coming your way. Also, Aussies and Kiwis. Diana posted a little video on Instagram where she inferred that she might be making it down your way in 2015, perhaps.
In so. April of 2015. Yes, there's exactly as Summer said, no confirmation, but the fact that she made a video saying she hopes this will happen is pretty good news.
Diana also posted some more photos speaking about World Outlander Day, which was June 1st.
The first one.
So it's the first official World Outlander Day. May we live through many, many, many more. And she also stated that she's already working on book 9. So she's barely got one in the can and she's already starting on the next one. And she said she's written about...
I say barely got 8 in the can.
And she's written about 500 words, she said, of book 9. So that's pretty exciting. Davina Porter was up for an Audie earlier this week. I think in the mystery category or something like that. And Recorded Books posted a picture of her. And she looks stunning as always. And also we got some more pictures from the Heart of Lightness people. They posted it opened, or premiered, excuse me.
On the 28th.
On the 28th. And they posted some pictures of the premiere. And also a new photo of Sam Heughan was released by them on their Instagram account. Looking quite dapper, I should say. That is a very warm-looking scarf. It's almost modern, though, isn't it? Is that a...
I don't think it's an old... I mean, well, the period.
Yeah.
I think it might be a, kind of a period piece. The it's also important to remember that it's not just Sam Heughan.
Oh, no.
Who is in there. It's also Laura Donnelly. Who plays our wonderful Jenny. And also, something that I did not know until I saw the actress's name, but I never made any connection. One of the actresses in the show, in the movie, is Daisy Head. Who's the daughter of Anthony Stewart Head.
Shut up, really?
No, he totally tweeted about it, and I totally retweeted him. I was like, a Buffy connection now. This is too much. This is too awesome.
Oh my gosh, all my verses are colliding.
I know, oh my gosh. So we have, if it's not enough to have, like, two Outlander, people from the Outlander cast, two large roles from the Outlander cast in this movie, which has gotten great reviews, gotten great welcoming in Norway, in Oslo. When I read that Anthony Stewart Head was tweeting about, you know, congratulations, and his whole family went out there to see her in Norway, and I thought, the premiere, I thought, what a small stinking, this is too much. I can't believe it. So yes, if you didn't want to see it, you have to go see it now for that reason, for another reason.
Okay, Buffy watchers.
Oh my gosh. Our friend KP will be all over that.
Oh my goodness.
Kelly, watch out. You have to go see this somehow.
And that wraps up announcements this week. So going into our whiskey pod.
Oh yes, we have an extra one.
We must have been drinking because we did an extra one.
Well, I think we were drinking. Well, no, Summer was like tasting and I guess I was drinking. I had a little bit more than she did, but... We ended up with one more week of Whiskey Pause.
You're welcome. And now it's time for our final
Whiskey Pod. In honor of Scotland's National Whiskey Month.
Right. So we're ending Whiskey Month with another whiskey. This one's made by Dewars. It's called Highland Honey. We got it for the honey flavor because it sounded like perhaps it
Summer
would
be able to drink it.
It would be sweeter, perhaps. The bottle, again, because it's a mini, doesn't have a lot of information on it, so we pulled it up, and it states, it's got a character sheet here. It's like, meet our new Highlander honey. It takes an original to craft an original. We start with iconic Dewars White Label blended Scotch whiskey and infuse it with Scottish honey harvested from bees near the Aberfeldy distillery and other natural flavors. The result is pure harmony. Dewars Highlander Honey is a perfect blend of complementing characteristics. It's traditional, but strikingly modern. And it says, our Dewars Highlander Honey is honeyed, citrusy, and sweet.
So we expect a lot of you, Dewars.
Honeyed, citrusy, and sweet.
And since they don't give us a color map.
They don't. They didn't look at the bottle. Us nearly as much information as the last one. But this one, again, is...
I mean, you'd say it's honey colored.
I'd say it actually is honey colored. So good job.
And I have high expectations for myself and for Summer on this one.
All right. Alright, let's get in there. It smells
like honey.
Sweet. It smells like whiskey. I mean, I'm at the point now where it just smells like whiskey.
Okay.
But not overpowering.
Which is good.
She can't even talk.
I'm saying, just wait, clear it out. You want a sip of iced tea?
Okay, the one thing I want to say before I get into the actual flavor is that as I inhaled while it was pouring into my mouth,
it overcame you.
It literally burned my nose. Like I had this burning in my nose.
We're not supposed to breathe and drink.
I wasn't really trying to, but
sniff and drink.
Anyway, this one is incredibly sweet.
Good.
Incredibly sweet and still burny.
It's gonna burn.
I know.
But the sweet is good. I'm glad you taste it.
It's incredibly sweet. Like this one literally tastes
like a dessert whiskey.
Like alcoholic honey.
So this will be good on like ice cream.
I mean, I wouldn't want to put that on ice cream. I would want to have my ice cream. I'm an ice cream purist. Don't put whiskey on it, please. But this one.
It smells good like honey.
Okay. It literally tastes like honey.
Yeah.
Kicks you in the balls. Like honey that kicks you in the balls. That should be their tagline.
Oh,
honey
goodness.
That kicks you in the balls.
Or the.
New Highlander honey. Okay. So.
Oh, gosh.
Highlander honey. Has now taken Cuddy Stark's position of being my favorite that
even
we've
after
done this
you
month.
Said?
Even
after it kicked you in the noodles.
It did, but it's the flavor.
It was enough.
Yes.
It was good.
It was.
Wow, you guys. So it's not. I think Drambuie, I think you really like it because it's not. It is whiskey, but it's liqueur and it's very sweet.
So I think, like I said, of the four that we've done, I'm going to call this one.
Your favorite.
My
so
favorite
far.
Of the four. But that needs to be taken with a grain of salt because
you
I.
need the five.
Oh, so
this
is
number
is it five.
There were
oh
five
my god,
Sundays.
5 weeks. Oh my god, five Sundays. Of the five, this one is going to be.
It's 6 plus 4 because we did 6 of the first tasting.
Okay.
And then 4 singles.
Of all of the whiskeys I've tasted this month, this would be my favorite of all of the whiskeys I've tasted this month. But that needs to be, like I said, taken with a grain of salt because I'm still not a giant whiskey fan. Mm-hmm. But I would probably mix this with something and drink it. I don't know that I'd want to drink it by itself.
Okay.
But
now,
go ahead. Now
I will.
Turn.
I will try it. I definitely see what you say. It's still 100% whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
It's still got a kick. But it tastes sweet going down. And the palate is sweet. You know, there's something in there that we didn't read about. There's something in there that's either ashy, peaty, smoky, or mossy. Because the aftertaste, I taste a bit of peaty, I think. I still taste the honey.
Mm-hmm.
It's good, and it's very sweet going down. But this has not a burning... but a weird kind of sensation / taste that I get when I taste something that's peaty.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something in there besides that. And they said it was the original.
It's a blend.
Let's do this.
It's still a blend.
Look up. It is. Let's look up Dewar's White Label.
Okay.
And see, even that says it's
that one, even that
smooth.
One says it's honey, vanilla, and smooth.
Yes.
Rich, golden, and mellow is their White Label.
But I have tasted sweet whiskeys or sweeter whiskeys that have the palate, the aftertaste is... nothing but sweet, and that didn't have a little bit of a hint of peaty, and I tasted a little bit of a hint of peaty there. So I would be curious, and it is a blend, so who knows?
It is a blend. There could be a little bit of stuff in there. Something peaty in there.
So I'm going to have to do some research on that. I'm very...
And I think she's a little sad that Whiskey Month is ending.
No, because like I said,
I mean,
we can do
still
this whenever
continue.
We want.
It's
we can,
true.
There's not enough whiskeys, well, probably are, to do every single time, but we don't have the funds to do that every single week. Definitely, we can do it every year as long as we have additional seasons. Thank you very much, please, and thank you, stars. But as long as we have additional seasons, right,
in which
we have a May, unless Scotland changes their National Whiskey Month, we can do this every season or every year. So that was fun. So thank you for... playing along or listening along. We may not have introduced you to anything at all, and you may have just listened laughing the entire time, all 5 weeks. But if we have helped you find something you like, then great. And thank you again for giving us those suggestions for summer. We're still trying to get our hands on some Drambuie. I know we can buy some, but we're looking for the minis.
No.
So if you know where they can be ordered from or purchased in a store, just, you know, a national chain or something, let us know. And...
what I will say, the one thing that I think you should take away from this, having done this for
me?
The last... No, not you.
Oh,
you,
listener.
The listener should take away from this is to be brave. Try things you don't think you're going to like. You know what I mean? And yeah, you may not like them, but I think, if nothing else, I feel better that I tried because I've never liked whiskey. And
she still doesn't.
But right. But in the past, I would have just been like, meh, I don't like it. But now...
she knows for sure she doesn't like it.
I do. But But I can speak from a place of intelligence and educational background with it, as opposed to just saying, nah, I don't like it. Why don't you like it? Because I don't like it. So, you know, get out there. Try some stuff that takes you outside of your comfort zone. That's what I'm taking away.
With whiskey.
From Whiskey Month. And now on to our read-along. This week we are doing chapter 36, entitled McGranick.
You were saying before that he's just such a great...
Well, McGranick is really one of my favorites. I know he's right up there with Murta for me, and Murta is awesome all around, and he's present in more books than this one. But I really think this is the only time that we see McGranick. He just kind of shows up and leaves, but he kind of leaves such a lasting, you know, indelible mark on the whole whole series. And in the prequel that Diana says she'll write,
he will definitely figure into that. So he'll be in there at some point, but it could be another 5-10 years.
I'm
guessing like 7 years or something.
I can wait. They can do a whole different cast of actors at that point, because the age difference will be
so much.
So great.
There is no Jamie at that point.
Of course not.
There's no Claire.
Nope.
There's way no Claire. Yeah. And there's way no Frank. Okay, so quickly before we get into this, the end of 35 is she's killed the wolf.
Yes.
She's pretty much surrendered or given herself up to die, because she knows she doesn't have the strength to kill any more wolves. She's trying to throw things at them.
Right.
And then arrows come, shoot two wolves.
And she basically throws herself on the people who arrive.
Help, yeah.
And she's just like, help me.
Exactly. So Claire finds herself in the home of Sir McGranick, a large man in a bearskin with eyes like blueberries.
Okay, so, yes. For as much crappy luck as they have, they do happen upon some really...
timely luck.
Exactly. They, yes. Like, for as like much like crap as they go through, they do... happen to sometimes meet up with just the right people at just the right time, who have just what they need.
Yes. And before we go on, do you know who I see, or whom I see as McGranick?
Yeah, I do, because you told me.
Well, and I also wrote it down. It was paper right here.
I wasn't even looking at that, because I remember what you telling
me. Now that I started watching Turn on AMC, mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. It's nobody but Angus McFadden. Now, I don't even know if he has blue eyes, but right now I don't care. Like, we know the eyes don't matter anymore.
No.
He doesn't have to have blueberry eyes.
Because if I can find a glass of blue sherry, I'll drink it.
Okay. Oh, I see. What?
His eyes? Claire's got...
Oh, gosh. Whiskey eyes.
Whiskey eyes.
Yeah. But doesn't he look like a... Well, the reason is because, in Turn, he's wearing... Well, no, and even in Braveheart, when he was the Bruce, right?
Yeah.
He had, like, all this big furs on him. He made him look even bigger than he is.
Yeah.
I just get this mental image of that when I think of McGranick in this big, burly, bear suit.
Wow.
Not a bear suit.
Y'all, I wish you could have just seen that.
No, you don't.
That was like...
What, the fists?
All of it. It was just... She became McGranick. Kind of.
Oh, not really. And what I wrote up here was, okay, I've liked him since Braveheart. I think I'm now more accepting of facial hair. Not not because of Angus McFadden, but just because, I mean, granted, we do see Dirty Jamie and Jamie with like a little bit of facial hair, but Dougal is like full on facial hair. Does Colum have some? I forget, honestly. It's been so long since I've seen a picture of Colm.
He did, except remember they shaved it all off for what looked like a flashback. But he did, but Colm had grizzly and whatnot.
Yeah, and Ronnie Goodwin in that shot. I mean, full-on facial hair. So, in general, the guys are going to have facial hair.
Well, yeah, who wants to take the time
unless they're young. Oh, well that, I'm just talking about in the times.
That's what I'm talking about.
Probably take the time.
Well, no, it's like...
Although,
no,
it would have been a chore.
That would have been one extra thing to do. And plus, it keeps them warm.
Yes. So... All I'm trying to say is, because of a number of things, there are people, there have always been men, I think, who can carry it off better than others. They find just the right, this doesn't sound weird, just the right cut. Mm-hmm. Just the right arrangement of things. And we're not going into discussion about facial hair and different styles, but there are certain things that, just like your hairstyle, right? Certain things flatter different facial styles. Facial styles?
Face shapes.
Oh my goodness, let's go on. So Claire is about to say why she needs help. And what happened to her, but she thinks she may be suspicious to them. Oh, more suspicious.
Well, of course, because she's English. She's English.
When they hear her English accent. And the archer who brought her to McGranick's home tells him that he found her near the prison fighting wolves. An English lassie, he says. Claire pulls herself up to her full height and adds strongly, English by birth, Scots by marriage.
Atta girl.
And that her husband is a prisoner in Wentworth. McCranick introduces himself then, and we find out his estate is called Eldridge Manor, and the woods surrounding it, Eldridge Wood. She recounts how she and some clansmen of Jamie's had attempted to gain entrance and remove him. McCranick invites her to sit at the hearth and has his people begin to care for her. They offer her soup and warmth. She continued to tell her tale, and she's still a little bit vague, but then she gives up all pretense. She's like, she had nothing else to lose and everything to potentially, Jamie to gain. She's like, I'm at my lowest. I don't care who, unless you're English, I'm going to talk to you, basically.
Well, it's not only that, but she's like, they can't kill him any more than they're going to kill him right now.
They can't, yeah.
Nothing could go any more wrong with
him. If these people refuse to help me,
of course,
I'm no worse off. So she tells him everything. And when McCranick tells her that it may not be so bad, she's shocked. But he explains, if it's the lad's arse he's after, he's none so likely to hurt him badly. But of course, he doesn't know Randall. And he adds, being buggered has seldom killed anyone. Claire wishes she had been a real witch and says she would have turned him into a toad, a big fat one with warts. Claire says that she thinks his arse is beyond saving, but it's his neck she's afraid for. McCranick then gets in her face and demands, if I said I'd help you, what good would that do? They discuss the potential problems with getting in, and Claire says she can show him the way. Just as he is saying it's too dangerous for him and his men, Murta enters at knife point.
Welcome back.
Big M is back on the screen. So McCranick is annoyed and surprised. Oh, sorry, little M.
McCranick, he's a big person. No, McCranick, I would say, is Big M.
Big and personality.
Then, hey, they're both M's. So if McCranick would be the Big M, and then Murta would be the little M. Little M.
Little monkey man? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Okay. Murta eyes him and asks him if his name is McCranick. If he was at the gathering long ago at Leoch. That's still going to do me in, just like Bowley. He says yes about 30 years before, and we find out that both men were at that gathering. Murta had killed a boar single-handed with the dagger.
Of course he did.
Because he's a monkey man.
He's a B.A.
B.A. monkey man. And he was given the tushes. It still looks like tushes. But I guess you say tushies? Anyway, tushes. Claire remembers the boar tusk bracelets that were Ellen Mackenzie's, later Ellen Fraser, whom she had seen when Jenny was going through her mom's jewelry box.
Mm-hmm.
Murta offers payment to McCranick for his help. Claire pulls out Ellen's pearls and McCranick recognizes them. He knows it was Ellen's son, so his more proof is coming out. He had given them himself to Ellen as a wedding gift. Claire collapses and retreats within herself.
Again, the odds that she goes to this house.
Not just a man who may or may not help, but a man who was freaking almost Jamie's daddy.
Well, he was in love with Ellen. There's so many men were in love with Ellen. And he hoped she'd marry him.
Claire collapses, retreating within herself, and the sound of cattle wakens her. McCranick goes outside, and she's about to ask Murta what to do next, but sees the look of excitement on his face, and he says to her, the kine, they're McCranick's. And now, just for us, I looked it up. We probably could have gotten by through some context clues, but I'm not that patient. So, it is an archaic term for the plural of cow, so cows. McCranick chews out a young man named Absalom for bringing back only 15 of his 40 heads of cattle. Murta is enjoying this spectacle and sneaks back into the shadows to observe. Claire sees the look of amusement on his face and realizes where Rupert was and what he was doing. She began to have hope. So basically, they had to have something to hold him on.
Right.
He is a mensch, so he is a good person. But he's not going to be stupid about things. Number two, this is Ellen's son. So that's a heart tug for him. I get it. But now you have him over a barrel. If he wants his stuff back, he's going to have to help you. Or not, he doesn't have to. But there's at least something that they have to barter with.
Oh, I don't even think he has to. I think that Rupert's already had the idea and taken his cows
to start
the whole thing down.
Oh, even without his help?
I never thought about that. I think they would have totally been prepared to do it with that.
Oh, so you're saying even if they never knew whose cattle these were, they were just going to take him and do something.
Well, he's already taken them.
Well, I know that, but I mean he was going to take them and do something with them, not knowing whose they were, basically. The next scene is at the prison. It is still full dark, save for the prison's lights. I almost said, save for the prison's lights. Mm-hmm. Too much Scottish R rolling. Claire's waiting under some trees while McCranick and his men do their part in the plan. She hopes he'll follow through. She is confident he will, especially if he hopes to get his purebred Highland cattle back. And that's what I'm saying. They have him. They have something that is a motivation
God,
for him.
How many people are over a barrel in this chapter?
Too many. The plan was to get... Well, not Claire. She has nothing to lose.
Nope. Just saying.
I know.
Randall has Jamie over a barrel. Sorry.
The plan was to get the cattle into the door she'd been forced out of by Randall.
Correct? Doors.
That's, I mean, that's what we know. Can't be the front door. Has to be the secret way in the back.
It's always the back door.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Speaking of that chapter and that title, only like two people called us on that. And I'm not saying no one else got it. Maybe you just weren't needing to call us out on that. But I'm surprised that we didn't get more feedback on those on that chapter. On the title, excuse me. On the episode title. She was also afraid that the plan would work, but that it would be too late. So you do have all these possibilities. You have nothing works at all, which is she has nothing to lose, right? And then you have it works and they get him out and he's still alive. But then you have it works and they get him out, but he's dead. I mean,
right.
It's just because they get him out is not even the end of it. You know, there's still...
Well, even when they do get him out, it's not the end of it. It's just the beginning.
Well, it is. But what I'm saying is just getting him out does not mean he will survive
alive. There's no guarantees on any aspect of this plan, for sure.
McCranach and his men come back from the prison, and he is in the best of spirits. He even thanks Claire, quote, for a most entertaining evening. I think this is so funny because this is a matter of life and death. And yes, he's helping, but he does see. I just think he gets a kick out of this whole thing.
Think about it, though. They're Highlanders. They're used to raids, and those were all done fun. And everyone ends up beat up and bloodied and bruised, but at the end of the day, they all think it's fun.
Diana describes him, his eyebrows and mustache coated with snow. He looked like Father Christmas on a spree. He had a wonderful time and recounts the look on Sir Fletcher's face when he was told that he was harboring stolen property. And yes, they had found Jamie. She has just enough time to look at his face before she's pulled back and they hurry to return to the relative safety of McGranick's house. As Hector puts Jamie onto the floor of McGranick's house... As Diana says, a limp, naked figure flopped out onto the pink and yellow flowers of Lady Annabel McGranick's pride and joy. We find out that he's been flayed, so they put him on his stomach. Lady Annabel offers to send for a physician, but it would take too long, and it would increase the danger to her household. Healer Claire emerges again and says, "Don't bother, I'm a physician." She first wants to get him warm. McGranick rubs Jamie's feet to help them get warm. Claire looks at Jamie's wounds and thinks that... the sheer orderliness of the damage, speaking as it did of a deliberation that reveled in each punishing stroke, made me feel sick with rage. Something larger had been used on his shoulders, cutting in some places so deep she could see bone. I mean, good gracious.
Yeah.
He's got thick... I mean, okay, I know he's not... Well, he is our Jamie. Think of Sam and how thick that muscle is on his trapezius, mm-hmm. his sternocleidomastoid, his deltoids, lats, everything.
Just say muscles.
Muscles on the top of his back.
There you go.
Can you imagine, like, I mean, I know it'll be makeup, but that is thick freaking muscle.
Yeah.
To get down there, that's like, maybe not an inch, but almost an inch thick.
I mean, on Sam, not on me. But either way, the fact that somebody would hit somebody...
With a different item, yeah, different
object. So hard, and so many times to have bone exposed... Gross.
He surely had broken ribs from the mallet. I wrote, Mallet O'Marley. She notices a small burn, and McGranick asks, "What in the hell did that?" Jamie replies, "A hot poker." McGranick gives him some whiskey, and he looks up at Claire. "Cows? Was it really cows, or was I dreaming?" When asked how he felt, he answers, "Alive." He's given more whiskey and then some tea.
They argue about that.
Yes, they do.
About what he should and shouldn't have.
Sir Marcus McGranick is such a mensch, as I've said. Servants bring in a camp bed, a mattress, blankets, bandages, hot water, and medical supplies. I mean, yes, I get it. He's like nobility or something. He's definitely got a title. But man, they just went all out. They did everything they could. Jamie is moved to the bed. Even Claire remarks on these apparent djinn who do her bidding. The whole house seemed magical, perhaps because the contrast between the howling cold outside and the luxurious warmth within, or maybe only because of the relief of seeing Jamie safe after so many hours of fear and worry, Claire feels or imagines. Of her hosts, she says, No questions were asked. We were Sir Marcus's guests, and Lady Annabel behaved as though it were an everyday occurrence to have people come in and bleed on the carpet at midnight.
Right.
McCranick notes that Randall went a bit far on his back, and Jamie says that he lost his head when he... and he couldn't finish the sentence. We could all fill that blank in.
Correct.
Claire is offered a number of items by Lady Annabel, but she only asks for one thing, an opiate, and she brings her laudanum. She intends to dose Jamie unconscious while she sets his hand, the bones of his hand. Jamie refuses any drugs. He asks for a little more whiskey and something to bite down on. She explodes. She tells him he doesn't need to be a hero anymore, that they all know what he's withstood, and quote, "Who in bloody hell do you think you are, frigging John Wayne?" Jamie tells it like this. The English will notice he's missing soon and will be on the lookout. Snow may slow them a little, and the other prisoners may dilute their search a bit, but he doesn't want to be drugged, defenseless, and helpless, and be taken. He says, "Claire, I'll not let them take me back. And to be drugged, to lie here helpless if they come, and maybe wake up chained in a cell again. Claire, I couldn't bear it." She starts to cry, and even in his state, he is concerned for her. "Don't cry, Sassenach," he says. He asks her to bring Myrta to him, and they chat for a bit. Then Myrta gently touches Jamie's ear. Diana says it's one of the few spots that's not injured.
Oh.
I know. Then he leaves. Claire follows him and grabs his plaid just before he leaves. She demands to know what he said to him. He says he's to keep watch, and if any redcoats are coming their direction, he's to ride back, and if time, make sure both are hidden. Then ride off with 3 horses to draw them away from McGranick's home. And if there isn't time, he's to kill Jamie and take Claire with him, willing or not. Just before he goes, she asks him for an extra dirk. Claire resets Jamie's hand. She keeps saying sorry, or she starts to reset his hand. And she keeps saying sorry every time she thinks she's hurt him. He spits out the leather gag and basically tells her to just get on with it. He replaces the leather gag and then crosses his eyes at her. She bursts into half-hysterical laughter before she could stop herself. Cheeks red, and she saw the shocked faces of Lady Annabel and the servants. Sir Marcus, though, had seen what Jamie did, and he grins. He eggs her on some more. "If the English turn up after this," he says, "I expect I'll beg them to take me back." That did it. She's able to do her work. McGranick comes to sit next to the bed. Diana describes him after he'd taken off his bear suit. Appeared as a soberly clad man of late middle age, with a neatly trimmed spade beard and a military bearing. She found his presence comforting. Diana describes Claire's work beautifully, and when she is finished, Lady Annabel tells her she'll take care of the rest and urges Claire to go to bed. She has experience with field dressing. Claire's on her way upstairs when she remembers something she wants to tell Sir Marcus and turns around. The latter casually rested a hand on Jamie's bare rump as he reached out for a rag, and Jamie arches his back and clenched his buttocks and let out an involuntary sound of protest and flung himself backwards despite his ribs or his hand, for that matter.
Poor thing.
Poor Jamie. I mean, good gracious buttercup.
God, it's like insult to injury.
I can't even... Ugh. Sir Marcus notices... Okay, get ready, listeners. Sir Marcus notices a sheen on Jamie's backside.
Yuck, y'all.
He says, "At least he had the consideration to grease you a bit beforehand." And Jamie replies, I didn't think it was so much for my convenience." At this point, it's just Jamie and Sir Marcus in the room. Claire and Lady Annabel are still on the stairs. Then Sir Marcus says something very important for Jamie and Claire, that Randall is dead. He'd been trampled to death by the kine. He describes what he'd seen. Then Sir Marcus says that if he lets it, it will heal like the rest of his wounds. Jamie asks for a small knife, and he points to the area where Randall had burned him and allows McGranick to cut the small burn mark out. Claire wakes up. She falls asleep. She wakes up and goes down. She's by his side. And this is the first time they've been alone since their few minutes at Wentworth before Randall caught them. She thinks he looks relatively okay, but knows that he'll need to talk to someone at some point. And though she knows he'll need it, she really hopes it will not be her. And that has to be also awful for her to feel that way. She knows she doesn't want it to be her, but she knows it might end up being her, and she doesn't want it to be her. He wakes up and asks...
She doesn't want to carry that.
Well, of course not.
Any more than he has to.
He wakes up and asks her if she's all right, and then she loses it. Even in his state, physical and emotional, he was comforting her. She asks him how he feels, which is kind of a silly question, but she's trying to ask a certain question. And he says he feels at war with his mind. His body's turned traitor. He wants to escape, to hit someone, to burn the prison to the ground. In other words, destroy the situation and remove all trace of its existence. Claire says, stone doesn't burn. And I thought, isn't that a really great line? Yes, it's a truth, but also, this thing that has happened is as real as the stone of the prison. You can't, there is physically no way to get rid of it. It has to become part of your landscape, and you just get on with it, and you heal. And I thought that was just, that one line stood out to me in the entire chapter. Poor Jamie shows the torture he feels in these lines. I want to hold you hard to me and kiss you and never let you go. I want to take you to my bed and use you like a whore till I forget I exist. And want to put my head in your lap and weep like a child. Jamie confirms that he had had Sir Marcus remove a brand, which Randall had done using his signet. Claire tries to ask about certain wounds and asks, are you badly hurt? Jamie replies that he's not got much area of himself that isn't wounded in some way. He says, I've got maybe 6 square inches of skin left that are not bruised, burned, or cut. But he knows what she meant. And he says, the 6 inches are all between my legs. Then Jamie says, it did hurt less than flogging, but he enjoyed it much less. He says that he doesn't want to tell her, but he feels he must before it chokes him. Jamie summarizes his experience thusly.
Here it comes, people. I love this.
I think it's as though everyone has a small place inside themselves, maybe a private bit that they keep to themselves. It's like a little fortress where the most private part of you lives. Maybe it's your soul, maybe just that bit that makes you yourself and not anyone else. You don't show that bit of yourself to anyone usually, unless sometimes to someone that you love greatly. Now it's like my own fortress has been blown up with gunpowder. There's nothing left of it but ashes and a smoking roof tree, and a little naked thing that lived there once is out in the open, squeaking and whimpering in fear, trying to hide itself under a blade of grass or a bit of leaf, but not making much of a job of it. He says that it was the first time he ever truly wanted to die. And then he asks Claire to hold him, and she does, as he is racked with spasms.
He's in shock.
He's in shock. And he is cold. With nothing else to do for it, she takes off her nightdress and lies next to him to share her warmth.
She's so practical.
She says to him as he puts his head into her shoulder, lay your head then, man. And Jamie says he recognizes it from when his mom used to say it to him. He says, Sassenach, who in God's name is John Wayne? You are, she says. Go to sleep.
And that is chapter 36. Join us back next week when we will be discussing chapter 37 with a special guest. Friend of the show, Dave Weinsock, is coming back with us next week. Give us a little update and to join us for our read-along. So we're very excited to share that with you.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We do enjoy having listeners. I'm trying to find a way of saying we enjoyed this episode, but this is one of the harder, there are difficult chapters. This is one of the harder chapters, of course, and the scene is already done. It was off screen, if you will, but this experience of Jamie's, as you may guess, stays with him throughout the rest of his life. There's healing, but then Diana writes, you cannot burn stone. As always, thank you so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/OutlanderPod. Or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com. I dreamt it last night.